So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 6 of the Rich in Facts podcast. Joining me today is a buddy of mine. We come from the same alma mater. I graduated in class of 2017 while he graduated in 2015 from Colby Sawyer College. He played 4 years on the men's soccer team. He was also an assistant coach for 3 years for both the men's soccer team as well as the women's basketball team. And this fall, he'll be starting his first season as the assistant coach for the soccer team, the men's soccer team at Clark University. Let me introduce you all to my guy, Alex Ortega. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, my man. So, you know, tell my audience a little bit about you, man, because, I mean, I'm curious myself. So, you know, where did your passion for soccer come from?
You know, according to my mom anyway, when I was 3 years old, I was always walking around the house with some sort of ball on my feet. And, you know, she couldn't really get me to stop. So she signed me up for rec soccer a year early. And from there, it kind of took off. I just kind of picked it up right away and just went with it. Started playing competitive travel. When I was 7 years old, playing for U-10s. So I was playing up a little bit, but, you know, it helped me in the long run. And from then on, you know, it took me to where I needed to go. I got to play at the college level. Pretty blessed to say that. So, it all started when I was 3 years old.
Man, did you ever, like... So, you know, I'm always curious about what those camps are like, because I never was on a team where I was on those camps, like, outside of the school program. So what's it like just when you're kind of going through those travel programs on your own? It's just kind of you and the team and not that school structure. Like, I always, it seems to me like that's where you kind of really, like, you really find your love sometimes going to those types of camps.
Definitely. You know, you're away from that school setting. It's a little less serious. Don't get me wrong, it's still competitive, it's still usually good level. But you know, you're really finding out where you belong in the sport, working on your skill set, you know, before the high school season starts, and, you know, playing against kids from different states and sometimes different countries, and just kind of seeing where you stack up and what you need to work on and what you're pretty good at. And that helped me for sure, you know, growing up. And by the time we got to high school season, you know, a lot of the guys were on the same page, you know, which kind of helped us build on our success over 4 years in high school.
And you played soccer growing up in Milton, Vermont, right?
Correct.
So what was the level of competition like in Vermont growing up?
That most of the talented kids in the area played club soccer, you know, for bigger clubs. But, you know, that I had that option for sure, but I was also into basketball as well. And whereas a lot of those kids who played club were dedicated to soccer year round. And although I would love that, I just, you know, I shared a love for basketball as well. A lot of my springs and summers were spent playing AAU basketball. So I didn't really, you know, leave a lot of time for club. So I chose, you know, a less demanding schedule where I could play both soccer and basketball. And I kind of made that work, you know, for my 4 years.
Yeah, so, you know, talk about your 4 years at high school. So you played soccer and basketball for 4 years in high school? And then when you got to Colby Sawyer, you only played soccer, Colby Sawyer, right?
Correct.
So what made you decide to, you know, to stick with soccer and kind of leave basketball behind once you got to the college level?
It was really tough, you know, because coming out of high school, I had one offer to play basketball at the University of New England, and I really considered going there, but, you know, I also pictured myself not playing soccer. I could not do it, you know, after playing for such a long time and putting a lot of hours into it. you know, whereas like picked up basketball in seventh or eighth grade, I just couldn't not play soccer. So I kind of went with my heart on it, and I'm glad I made the choice that I did, you know, because without that, you know, I probably wouldn't be coaching soccer right now, to be honest. So it all kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah, and, you know, you going from being on the Colby Sawyer soccer team, I think you weren't you the captain your senior year as well?
I was, yeah.
So what was that like going from being on the – I mean, just talk about your experience of what that was like being at Colby Sawyer, because, you know, for the two of us that go there, we know how much love the soccer team gets at Colby Sawyer. Just what was that experience like playing soccer there for 4 years?
We really care about our sports up there, which is really nice. You know, we have a beautiful, beautiful facility. You know, one of the best soccer fields in New England, so that's always a plus. You know, I played with a lot of great players. You know, in my 4 years, you know, my roommates were all soccer players, so it's kind of a thing that we shared. You know, we had a lot of good times on and off the field. But playing soccer and being a successful team, especially my junior and senior season, was awesome. You know, it kind of culminated, you know, the previous 20 or so years of playing soccer and, you know, finally seeing it into something, you know, really cool. You know, we made a really good run my junior year to the championship. You know, we weren't supposed to be there, but we did. We made it there. You know, that was a really good confidence booster, and we kind of rode that high into senior year. You know, we won program record amount of games that year. We a ton of other records, so it was an awesome time to be there. You know, getting to the other side of it, coaching, you know, I wanted to keep building on what, you know, my senior class kind of left behind. So it was a great time. You know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, so talk to me what that transition was like, you know, going from being the guy on the field to being the guy off the field, having to, you know, get those guys to play the way you want them to play. Like, I know that can be, I mean, tell me about that, because I bet that was probably, that probably had its own challenges, just not being able to be out there that time.
Oh, man, you have no idea. You know, especially, you know, playing with a lot of those guys for such a long time, you know, day in and day out, going through that grind with them, and then being, you know, on the sideline, not being able to, you know, actually help them on the field was super, super frustrating. It took me a while to adjust, to be honest, you know, wanting to play and, you know, just kind of just not being able to do it. I didn't really have a release, you know. I really wanted to get out there and, you know, continue that success. But it was difficult. But once I learned to kind of dial it back and, you know, realize that it's not really about me anymore, about teaching the guys, that's when I started to have a lot more fun, and that's when I definitely knew that coaching was something that, you know, I really wanted to do, because it keeps me close to the game, and it kind of helps me, you know, I have an outlet for, you know, my passion and my love for the game. In terms of the transition, it was pretty difficult, you know, playing, like I said, playing with those guys and then hopping right into coaching. You know, the social aspect and the on-the-field aspect was really difficult. But, you know, it was tough, you know, especially first year out. Don't really have a lot of friends in the area. You know, they all kind of moved on after graduation. So it was a tough year, but I knew it would be worth it, you know, in years to come. And looking back, I've grown a lot since then in the short 3 years. So, you know, I'm very thankful for that, for sure.
And, you know, you being the coach, you talked about the social aspect and that adjustment. What was, how did the team receive you, you know, from, was it tough to kind of demand that respect from them because they had seen you as a teammate for a couple of years and now suddenly you're kind of like the boss? Like, what was that part like?
You know, that too had its ups and downs. You know, the guys who played with me, you know, they respected me in that way. So I wasn't. The previous year, had a lot of individual success as a player, which kind of, you know, made them respect me as well. But they, you know, there was times where, you know, they, you know, give me the full attention and full respect, which I understand, you know, because as difficult as it was for me. I'm sure it was very difficult for them as well. But, you know, they started to adjust, and, you know, I did as well. I had to, you know, find that balance between, you know, coach and I guess you can say friendship, what we used to have. And, you know, once we kind of established that, you know, it was much better, you know, for both sides.
Man, you play for coaches that had, I mean, you had some good players in that team. Denali, you know, Zach had a really good year. Andrew, and then even just as far as like the coaches, like it's crazy how you went from like Craig to man, it's crazy. I forget the name. I'm so mad because he's such a nice guy. But the coach,
Charles.
Yeah, Charles. I knew it started with the C, but yeah, you know, just like, you know, being like, what was it like coaching under Charles as opposed to Craig?
Craig's a passionate guy. You know, he had a crazy love for the game, and I was told, you know, there's 1,000 ways to get the same job, you know, and I'm a firm believer in that, you know, coaching under two coaches that just have, you know, different coaching styles, and that's fine, you know, as long as you can get the guys on board and get them to respond, you know, that's okay. You know, because under Coach Metz and under Coach Wilkinson, we were both very successful and had successful teams. So it's just kind of about, you know, the culture that you preach and getting the right guys to buy in, you know, just run the system. And I think that under Coach Metz and Coach Wilkinson, I learned a lot about myself as well, what kind of coaching style works for me, what kind doesn't, you know, how I want to be approached and all that sort of thing. So, you know, it was good for me to honestly, you know, coach under two good coaches and learn, you know, their styles and what works for me and what doesn't. So it was great.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, one thing I really like about Colby Sore is that, you know, they have a way of bringing people back, right? Like you see a lot of people that graduated in our years, they come back and they either come back as coaches or they're part of like the academic staff. It's like, that school has a way of making you come back, man.
Absolutely.
Alumni weekends, like it's crazy. And it was fun. Like even just me being able to be the PA announcer and calling you guys' games, like I enjoyed every, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, whatever you guys had a game on, like whether it was 80 degrees or, you know, 10. Like I always enjoyed the energy that Colby sort of had on Saturdays when they had like this doubleheader soccer games, and then you had the field hockey game going on the other side. Like that was awesome, man. I still have good memories looking back at that.
Yeah, man, small school, but you know, I really care about their sports, you know, and that was a big decision, a big part of my decision in going there was, you know, big sports following. That's important for me.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of sports following, you know, the 2018 World Cup, man, I mean, like, I'm not big into soccer right now, but, you know, I know a lot happened. I was following up with all the updates and whatnot, crazy upsets. You know, talk to me a little bit what it was like watching it this year.
It was unbelievable. Like you said, it was crazy. You know, I think this World Cup, there was a record amount of goals scored in stoppage time, a record amount of own goals. And for me, the coolest part was just, you know, the smaller countries qualifying for the World Cup, you know, like Iceland and teams like that, you know, we're not accustomed to seeing. And I felt like talent-wise, it was a much more balanced World Cup. You know, you have your perennial powerhouses, Brazil, Germany, Spain, and all that, but, you know, you had some teams really step up and kind of, you know, put forward, you know, their best foot, which was really awesome to see. It's good for soccer. It's good for the world. And it was just great. You know, France, you know, obviously taking it home was huge. You know, looking at their roster, you know, there's a lot of young, talented players. And that's going to be a team, you know, for the next, you know, 10 years. That's going to be challenging everybody for, you know, for world dominance. So it was good to see someone that wasn't Germany, Spain, Brazil, you know, making a name for themselves. But it was just absolutely crazy. Every game had, you know, a headline. It was just fun to watch. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like there was like, I remember reading like early, there was a record for goals scored like after the 90th minute. Germany got knocked out at the group stage.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Ronaldo's getting knocked out in the Sweet 16. Some people think this could be Messi's last time in the World Cup. Like, it's just, there were so many awesome storylines, man. I'm disappointed I didn't catch more of it, but I feel like it's gotten so much bigger in the U.S. now, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it was huge over here, and we didn't even qualify for this World Cup. So,
yeah.
You know, imagine if we did, you know, what kind of following we'd have over here. You know, because, you know, the whole world stops for this month, and we all kind of just tune in, you know, whether you're really interested in soccer or not. You know, it's the world's biggest stage, and, you know, great things happen, and unexpected things happen, and it's just so much fun to watch, so much fun.
Absolutely. Man, I mean, we could go in even deeper, and I could definitely talk, you know, more about, last question before I kind of get into like the Boston aspect, things like the professional sports. So what made you decide to go with Clark University? Because you talked about, well, actually I'll let you get the floor on this one. I'm curious to, you know, how you're how you ended up with Clark.
Well, Charles Metz, the current Colby Sawyer head coach, was an assistant there 3 seasons ago for 2 years. And, you know, he stayed very close with his mentor, the Clark head coach, Matt O'Toole. And talking with Charles, you know, I had to move on at some point from Colby Sawyer being a player for 4 years and being a coach for 3. You know, you're kind of there for a long time. You don't want to feel stuck. So, you know, it was good for me to be able to take advantage of this opportunity. Clark got an opening as well. And it just kind of made sense. Mentor. So it just makes perfect sense for me to, you know, to take advantage of it and make the jump. You know, I'm really excited. It's great soccer in that conference. You got a couple nationally ranked teams, you know, Springfield, Wheaton, Babson. So it's, you know, it's going to be some good soccer. I'll be there for 2 seasons. I'm hoping to learn a lot. I already have. I've already networked, you know, pretty well, meeting a lot of new coaches and all these camps I've been doing this summer, and it's just great. You know, I'm really excited for the opportunity, and I'm excited to see what happens this fall.
I lied. This is my last question. So, and this isn't just for you. This is, you know, for kids. People watch that, you know, are either athletes and they might want to be coaches someday. You know, what's the biggest thing that you've gotten so far from being a coach? Like, what's the either best advice you've been given, or I would say, what would you think is the most important thing you've learned so far since, you know, being on this coaching path that you're on?
A couple things. The first thing is, I mentioned earlier, is that there's 1,000 ways to do the same job, you know, and I've seen that, you know, firsthand and experienced it firsthand. So, you know, over these years, this will be my 4th year as a college coach. I'm kind of developing my own coaching style that's a little bit different from other coaches. One that's kind of unique and it works for me. So I'm curious to see, you know, one day if I become a head coach, whether, you know, that'll work, you know, cause it's all about knowing your players and kind of basing it off of that. Cause you don't want to be that coach who runs kind of a dictatorship and, you know, it's my way or the highway. You know, you can have kids who see the game differently and learn the game differently. And, you know, if you want to keep them on board and really keep that culture intact, you have to adjust to your players. I'm a really firm believer in that, you know, because if you don't have a culture, you don't have anything. And I'd say the second piece of advice, you know, that I've really taken to heart so far is, you know, you really got to put yourself out there. You really got to network, and especially in coaching, it's all about who you know, really. And I was given a great example, you know, by a coach I met one time, and he's like, if I'm if I have an opening on my coaching staff and I'm looking to hire an assistant coach who has 10 years of experience, but no master's degree, no doctorate or anything like that, as opposed to a candidate that has 3 years of experience and a master's, I'm always going to take that guy with experience. Now, it's interesting to me because coaching is a very, you know, superficial profession. You know, you need certifications, you need, you know, a master's degree really helps. So that kind of was the eye opener to me in a sense that, you know, you really got to network and you really got to get yourself out there because, you know, I currently don't have a master's degree. I'm working on it, but I don't have one yet. And, you know, but I'm starting to build my network a little bit more. So it's going to come down to, can I get that job without having a master's degree? Well, how are you going to get that? By networking. So I really, you know, put myself out there. You know, all these camps have various, you know, divisions, you know, 1, 2, and 3 of coaches there, head coaches, assistant coaches, associate head coaches, graduate assistants, all sorts of coaches. But you know, it's just great, you know, to the network. It's very, very important. So those are the two things that I really, you know, I'm focusing on my coaching path so far.
Absolutely. I mean, I wish you luck, man. Now, definitely, you seem like you've definitely, you know, you have the maturity of a coach. I can already feel it from talking to you. And like I said, I wish you nothing but the best at Clark, man. And I'm sure I'm going to see you having your own team someday soon.
That'd be nice. Definitely the end goal.
All right. Here's the truth. I'd be lying if I didn't say this. This is the last question I have. So as far as coaching goes, like what's your goal as far as coaching? Is it soccer? Is it basketball? And if it's soccer, like what's your vision? Like where would you want to see yourself coaching someday?
Well, you know, that decision was pretty tough. You know, do I stop coaching basketball and really focus on soccer, or do I just pursue basketball? You know, it was a really tough decision because I'm such a lover of both sports. But for me, it kind of goes back to my college decision. Could I be okay with not being around soccer? And, you know, came to the same conclusion. I said, absolutely not. I have to be around soccer. I mean, there's nothing better than being outside on a nice day on a nice grass field. You know, there's nothing better than that. So for me, you know, this decision at Clark was kind of a no-brainer. Basketball jobs were kind of on the back burner, especially when this Clark job came to be. So, you know, I'm happy with my decision. And, you know, one day, you know, the goal is to coach at a higher level, you know, to advance yourself. That's Division One, Two, or being a head coach somewhere. But for me, you know, it's hard. I don't really know where I see myself yet. I don't know if I want to go to Division One, be an assistant coach, you know, and climb that ladder. Or, you know, after these couple of years, do I, you know, progress into a higher level Division Three and then become a Division Three head coach? I really don't know. You know, I kind of just got to ride the wave and see where it takes me because, you know, coaching is so crazy. You know, in these next 2 years, you know, after I'm done at Clark, I don't know where I'm going to be. And I think that's really exciting. You know, I could take a job in California, Texas, or Florida, but I don't really know. And I think that's really cool. So for me, you know, my path is wide open. It's kind of wherever it takes me. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier about building that network. You know, I really don't know where I'm going to end up.
It's huge, man. Absolutely. I think that's a really good mindset to have in your 20s because, you know, it's like, so much gets exposed to us like right now. And, you know, I don't think you necessarily need to know what the answer is, but just, you know, don't close your mind off to any opportunities, right? Like make sure that you have a foot in every single door, because when you have your foot in those doors, then you'll be able to decide what you want for yourself. You won't have to think too much about it.
Absolutely. You know, not being tied down geographically, you know, is definitely an advantage. You know, when in the job hunt and the coaching circle. So, you know, that's one thing I got going for me as well. But no, just just build, to where I want to go. So.
Word. But yeah, man. I mean, I love the soccer story. Like, I love the soccer story. It's awesome. I'm definitely gonna be following next year. I mean, the World Cup in 2022. I'll tell you that much. I'm not missing that.
TV, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, man. Now we gotta get into our Boston sports. So, I mean, as Patriot fans, man. I mean, as a Patriots fan, it's been a hell of an like. I'm still kind of like, I'm a little oversaturated with football because I'm still butthurt about the whole Malcolm Butler situation. And then, I really feel like we left the Super Bowl on the table, man. Like, I still cannot believe to this day the benching of Malcolm Butler. And I think, but I'm even more shocked at the fact that I feel like it's rubbed off on guys at the top, right? Like Tom Brady missing OTAs, him kind of going on this sort of Hollywood-esque lifestyle where he's kind of putting himself more out there, doing these like sit-down interviews with Oprah and, Gronk's talking about retirement and you got dudes like Stallone trying to get him to be in Hollywood. Like, should we be worried as Patriot fans about, like, our team this year is what I'm asking you?
Seems, in the past four seasons, there's always been some sort of drama in the offseason, whether it's about Tom Brady and his health, Gronkowski with injuries and surgeries and retirement. It all comes back to the same thing. As long as we have Tom Brady, as long as we have Belichick, I am a firm believer that we're going to make a run. It helps that we play in the worst division of football that we've dominated for so long. But, we're not oblivious to the fact that, they can't live forever and they can't, perform at a high level forever. But, we're taking the time to appreciate, what we're seeing. Tom Brady's in his 40s and playing, top five quarterback football. And he's still getting the Super Bowls and still putting his team a chance to win. And that's something, that I don't think we'll see for a very long time. And as a Patriots fan, I'm just saying, just ride it out, enjoy it while it's lasting. Gronk's not going anywhere. Tom Brady's not going anywhere. You gotta wave and go with it,
Well, see, that's the thing. I was watching a couple episodes of Tom versus Time, and all of a sudden it's like Brady's not even sure if he really wants to do this anymore. And it's like, I'm like, dude, yesterday you were talking about how you wanted to play till 45. Now, Jimmy G gets traded, you lose the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't really know if I want to be here. Like, in a way, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, the chemist, like, is he going to be all in this season? I'm not – if Brady comes in, if is he going to be focused on football? Is Gronk going to be focused on football? Because, Belichick wants his team to be run a certain way. And if Gronk's out here, doing crazy celebrations after touchdowns, I'm worried that's going to divide the locker room because if one guy's rejecting the coach, now other guy's going to think, well, what about me? Kind of like what was going on with Alex Guerrero and the whole how guys are going to see him instead of the team trainers, like – Do you, I guess, so you don't think the friction is going to affect the locker room at all?
I don't think so. It's a culture thing with those guys, and they know what to expect when they go in the Patriots locker room, when they put on the Patriots jersey. They know, what they're dealing with, what they're getting into. And I'm not sure if you saw this article. I forget what player it was. But he either left the Patriots, got cut by the Patriots, or requested a trade because he said that they didn't have enough fun. And that made me laugh because I was like, okay, winning a lot of games, it must not be fun. But, it goes back to the whole culture thing. The Patriots have a culture. It's worked for them. Next man up, that whole thing. But for me, you know, winning cures all. And once they take the field, start winning games, I think it'll all go away. Usually does each year. You know, that year when the Patriots lost to the Chiefs, like 47 or something like that, out in KC, everyone's questioning. Tom Brady's too old. Belichick needs to retire. All this other stuff. And then they go on to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, winning cures all. And I think this will be put to rest, you know, after week two or three, or 3-0, and life is good.
So, you know, we're talking about Brady. Now I got to talk about my guy, Jimmy G, who we traded to San Francisco, you know, for a box of cookies. All right. So he was 5-0 as a starter last year. The guy signs a 5-year, you know, $137 million deal. Did we make the right choice by trading this man to San Fran?
I disagree. He's an absolute stud. You know, he's still undefeated as a starter, playing with limited weapons over there in San Francisco. You know, he stepped in and did a great job. It looked like the offense didn't miss a beat. They actually looked even a little bit sharper. It was really unfortunate, you know, that trade went down. You know, there's rumors about, you know, what happened in the front office as to why it happened. And after, you know, rumors had circulated that Jimmy G wasn't leaving, then he ended up being traded. And, you know, who had to do with it and all that other stuff. But I think it's a bad trade. You know, with Jimmy G, that future is secure. You know, that winning culture is still secured for however long he can go. That's would have been like a passing of the torch thing. It's really too bad that we don't get to see that, you know. And now, it's just a big question mark. Brady goes down, then what? What do we got? You know, so it's kind of tough.
We got Brian Hoyer, man. You had the Browns at 6-2 a couple years ago. Remember that?
Yeah, Brian Hoyer making his rounds through the league. But still, it's tough. Longevity-wise, we don't really know what's going to happen.
So if you had to choose, because, you know, for me what it came down to was it sounded like, you know, Belichick was ready to pull the trigger either in the middle of the season or just like, you know, right before the season started last year. Would you have been okay if they had traded Tom Brady and just, you know, rolled out last season with Jimmy G?
Externally. You know, just because of who it is and what he's done, his body of work. But, you know, Tom and Bill have disagreed on, you know, the longevity of Brady's career. Brady thinks he can play to the mid-40s. Bill is so optimistic about it. So it was kind of a toss-up. But, you know, for sure, Patriots Nation would have been their minds if they traded Tom Brady. And I think I would have too, you know, especially knowing he's got a couple of years left in the tank. But, you know, there has to be a time where it happens eventually. But I'd like to see him in his career as a Patriot. You know, I feel like that makes the most sense.
Dude, I'll be honest, man. I think I would have been hurt, but I would have been ready to move on. Because I'm looking at us having, you know, 5-6 seasons of Jimmy G going 10-6, 11-5, probably getting a first round bye a couple times, and we might not win a championship. We might get to one Super Bowl, but you know, I believe I have a little more faith in Belichick than I do in Brady. So if he really thinks that yo, like we can do it with this guy, I would have been fine with it because for me, like, well, at that time I'm thinking, okay, this could be Brady's last good year, and then if he plays next year, all of a sudden he's gonna crash because. You know, when quarterbacks decline, it happens so fast. Like, it's not something that just kind of gradually happens for other athletes. It's just like, you know, one season you're throwing 30 touchdowns, the next season you're throwing 10 and 15 picks. So, to me, I'm just like, dude, like, if they had won the Super Bowl, my thing was, okay, if you win the Super Bowl, I was thinking this in 2017. If you win the Super Bowl this year, then it's okay because I'll take a championship over, you know, six good years with no ring. But when you lose the Super Bowl, it's just kind of like, man, like, this is what you kept him for, and you didn't do it. So to me, it kind of looks like, at the moment, it looks like a failure. But if they can do it this year, then I'll change my mind.
Culture thing. You know, nobody expects, you know, the Patriots to lose more than, you know, 4 or 5 games a season. And that's still, you know, with Tom Brady at his age. That's pretty impressive. So that's, you know, that's hard to move away from. Especially when you know a guy, you know, as cerebral as Tom Brady is, you know, can pick apart any defense any time. It's hard to get rid of. And, you know, even though, you know, we didn't take home the Super Bowl this year, still got there when, you know, we weren't even really favorites. And I think that's something to really, you know, to take in mind when, you know, the front office is trying to make decisions about who to keep and who to trade, and who to sign and who not to. But I think, you know, they made the right choice keeping Tom, but trading Jimmy was kind of an eyebrow raiser for most people. You know, after he's told we're going to keep him, and he's the future, blah, 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 and then he's just gone, and he's already being a stud for an underachieving team. It's kind of like, well, shit, what do? Kind of thing. Now we have Brian Hoyer as our backup. Like, what is going on? But, time will tell.
That division is going to be fun to watch next year. The NFC West, because, I mean, Seattle's in – they're kind of in full rebuild mode now. You know, they pretty much got rid of the Legion of Boom. You know, you got, like
– Right,
you know, like Chancellor might not ever play again. Sherman's in San Fran. And, you know, you got the Rams that just came off, like, an 11-5 season. Like, they're young and up and coming. Like, the 49ers, they look like they've got a good – they've got a good program in place there. Like that division is going to be fun to watch. But
absolutely, and
yeah, but so I mean, as far as just like, you know, Boston. Now we got to shift to you know, team number two, our Boston Celtics. Been another crazy offseason, man. I don't know about you, but like I was shocked that we lost Game 7 to Cleveland. I didn't think we were going to win the series, but once it went to 7, I thought we had them.
You know, especially being at home where they only had dropped. You know, I don't think they lost a game at that point at home in the playoffs. And as I was watching it, you know, you had to think, all right, that's LeBron. It's Game 7. Trip to the finals on the line, you knew something was going to happen. And it was more of, are the Celtics ready for it? And I think they were, for the most part. But, you know, I was sitting there watching the game, and it was, I think Cleveland was up just by a few. It was getting towards the end of the fourth quarter. And that's when the inexperience really showed for Boston. You know, you had Jaylen Brown taking bad shots. Rush shots. Tatum missed a couple good looks. You know, it more so the shot selection was what really stood out to me, and that's what lost them that game. Because there weren't a lot of points scored in that game. So in games like that, you really got to take each possession and kind of break it down and make sure we're getting good, clean looks. And there was a couple times where Jaylen Brown specifically was early in the shot clock, off balance, double teamed. It's just, you know, that wasn't really good. And it was kind of not really what you're used to seeing from the Celtics. You know, as a Laker fan, I was kind of happy to see, you know, the Celtics lose, but they should have won. They should have won that game. And they kind of, I think they'll use that, you know, as motivation for next year, you know, along with Gordon Hayward coming back healthy. You know, Celtics getting another good guy in the draft with a good piece. I think they'll be ready. I think they'll be ready for many years.
You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting. If you're talking about that first round pick, Robert Williams, like, he's got to show up to practice first on time. Let me just tell you that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And wake up.
Like, you already heard rumors about this guy coming in that, you know, he's kind of a hothead. So, I mean, you talked a lot about locker room culture. It's going to be interesting to see if Brad Stevens, you know, can kind of work his magic on Williams, because that's the type of guy that we need, you know, like what the Celtics do. You know, a front court player that can just really kind of bring a little more aggressiveness. Because Horford, you know, Horford's good, but that's not like, in my ideal world, that's not the guy I want, you know, at center or power. Like, I think Horford's more of a power forward. He's just not built for that kind of, that's not his game. He's not someone who's going to pound you inside. He's a little more finesse. And so we need a guy who can be in there and get physical. But
yeah, that was Boston's problem for the last few years, not having an athletic rim protector. And I think they, you know, really did well in the selection, you know, in picking him. But like you said, it's just the one guy that really needs to bring some energy. You know, he's not very gifted offensively, but, you know, that'll come. He's still a young guy. But the athleticism is just huge and something that they haven't had in that position in a long time. I mean, he's kind of like Amir Johnson was, you know, a little bit more talented, obviously, but just an energy guy. You know, he does his job, plays about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game, sometimes less. Just goes out there, gets maybe 8 boards, 6 points. Nothing flashy, but he's an energy guy. I think that's what they were going for. But like you said, he's really going to get his shit together. It's been a month, and he's already getting into a lot of stuff. So definitely not the Celtics way, you know, having guys do this off the court crap.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, you know, and the thing is, we don't need him to score. Because if you look at the Warriors, you know, they're not asking JaVale McGee or Zaza Pachulia to score. They just need you to, you know, give us your 10, 15 minutes, get some boards, be able to run the floor with us. Like, you got to have the speed and the athleticism to be on the court when we want to play fast. And if he can do that, we'll be fine, because I'm looking at 4 guys that could give you 20 points a game next season or close to that. You know, if Tatum goes from giving you 14 to giving you 18, 19 in his second year, and Brown can give you something like that, like, that's, you know, we're looking at a pretty powerful – you know, a pretty powerful set from 1 to 3. And one of those guys might end up having to play the 4 if they want to go small like that to start the season. But, you know, you being a Lakers fan, like, I'm just going to have to shift the subject from the Celtics to the Lakers for a second. How did you feel when you found out LeBron James signed that 4-year deal with Los Angeles?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, lifelong Kobe fan, you know, having the best guy in the league, in the world, on your team was always, you know, a pleasure, a gift. You know, when we went away from that for a few years, it was kind of tough to watch. But, you know, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka have done an unreal job in rebuilding the team. That bus left behind, he kind of screwed us over before he left.
Dwight
gave us some pretty shitty contracts that we had to clean up. But, you know, they're doing a great job. You know, they're making it an attractive place to play again. And it's about time. We got 2 good draft picks last year, you know, Lonzo and Kuzma. And Julius Randle is a great NBA piece. He unfortunately left us, but, you know, he was really important in making an attractive place to play again. You know, Brandon Ingram is as healthy as ever, looking to make, you know, a splash. So I'm really excited, man. We got a lot of young pieces, and, you know, it was only a matter of time before we got another All-Star. You know, it's Los Angeles, after all. Who doesn't want to play there? You know, so
Paul George,
just LeBron this year, somebody else coming next year. Don't know who it's going to be, but, you know, it's a plan. You know, definitely won't be LeBron for much longer. I can tell you that much.
So how did you become a Lakers fan?
Growing up watching basketball with my dad, you know, he's a big Knicks fan. You know, he's a New York guy, born in New York City, you know, grew up there. And I remember just sitting on the couch with him one day. He was folding laundry, and the basketball game was on. I was like, Dad, who's playing? And it was the New York Knicks and Los Angeles Lakers. And naturally, you know, I wanted to root against my dad, the team he liked. But it just so happened that the Lakers had this young man on their team wearing number 8, who I just fell in love with. I was like, this guy is amazing. He is unbelievable. Like, this is my team now. This is my team. I think I had to be 6 or 7 years old. So this was the Kobe Shaq era, and that team was just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And that's where my love for basketball really started. And that's how I became a Lakers fan.
You know, it's funny because I was cracking on Lakers. I have a cousin, she's a Lakers fan, and I was like, y'all were pretty quiet for a couple of years, you know, during Golden State's run. It's like, what's it like watching? I mean, I guess it'd be different if you're from the area and you kind of seeing, like, the culture of the state change. But it's funny how, like, you know, the Lakers, the NBA wants the Lakers to be great, right? The league's better when the Lakers are good, when they're relevant and they're talking. But I know that there's Lakers fans that they're not happy about LeBron because they're such – They're the opposite Kobe fans where they're like they're pro Kobe and anti LeBron. Where do you? I mean, it sounds like you're not on that spectrum. But how do you view that? How do you view that version of the fan?
Well, for me, anyone who doesn't like LeBron, you know, is kind of closed-minded, in my opinion. He's unbelievable. He does everything. He plays the basketball game the right way. You know, people get on him for his antics. You know, the flopping and all that other stuff, but whatever, you know, unfortunately, that's part of the game nowadays. And if anyone that can't appreciate what LeBron has been doing since he got into the league, you're not a basketball fan, and I don't want to talk to you. You know, he's such a good player. He does everything, every single thing that an NBA player should do. And he's had no problems off the court. He's done a lot of humanitarian work, especially in Cleveland, where he's from. And how can you hate a guy like that? Yeah, he's had, you know, his moments on the court and all that, but what athlete hasn't, you know? And it's unfortunate he's put under such a crazy scope, you know, because he's been in the league since he was 18 and all that other stuff, that he's just judged for every single thing he does. Everything's compared to Michael Jordan. Everything's compared to Magic Johnson. Everything's compared to Kobe Bryant. Why can't you just appreciate the greatness? It drives me nuts. And, you know, I'm so excited to have him with the Lakers. He's really going to help those young guys out, help them mature a lot faster. And it's a great move. It's a great move for him. You know, a lot of it had to do with his family. His son is on a crazy high school team now. I think that was a big part of the move as well. So I'm excited. Los Angeles is ready for it. The NBA is ready for it. It's going to be the next 4 years are going to be crazy.
How good do you see the Lakers? I mean, like so as far as year one goes with the roster they have right now, where do you think they'll end up in the standings next season?
I give them a 5 finish. Obviously, the West is competitive, very competitive. But, you know, looking at teams and what they have, you know, there shouldn't really be too much discussion as to why they wouldn't finish in the top 5. You know, Houston's very talented. Golden State obviously loaded up again. But outside of that, you know, what is there? Portland finished 3rd or 4th with a depleted roster. You know, add LeBron to the mix with the Lakers. They match up perfectly. They match up with the Rockets. They match up with Utah. They match up with Oklahoma City. So, I mean, there's no real reason they shouldn't finish in the top 5. You know, and that's, you know, as a Laker fan, I personally think they can finish as high as 3, maybe even 2, you know, depending on injuries and stuff like that. But the sky's the limit, really, when you have young guys and, you know, probably one of the best players of all time to come in and help your system. I mean, anything can happen.
I have to admit, man, I was shocked because I really believe that, you know, and I do really appreciate LeBron's greatness, but from, you know, how, like, what's the path to get to the finals? Because, you know, in terms of getting to the finals, guy, you know, you want to be challenged, but you don't necessarily always want to go through the best. You don't want to necessarily play every great team and wear yourself out. That's why I thought, okay, you know, he would stay in the East and maybe go to Philly where, you know, he can kind of restack the deck. Because Cleveland as a franchise, the problem is they weren't better than Golden State. And the fact is, no free agent was going to go over there. So I didn't blame LeBron if he wanted to, you know, go to another team where you have a better chance of winning. But, you know, for years we've just kind of heard the talk about, okay, you know, LeBron couldn't do all this coasting in the West that he could do in the East because he'd be playing against better competition. And instead of finishing at 2 or 3 coasting, you'll end up finishing 8 or maybe even not making the playoffs. And, you know, you'll be in a tough situation. So I was shocked he decided, okay, I'm going to go West, because now that means you got to play Golden State before you get to the finals. And you probably got to play like 1 or 2 other really good teams before that. So I was like, whoa. And you're going to a Lakers team that's not ready to win right now. And you're, you know, 32, 33 years old. So, you know, I was shocked by that. But that tells me he really believes that. I mean, like you said, I think family is a big part of it, too. You know, his kid is having success down there in high school. But at the same time, I think LeBron is, he's a businessman, too. And he's also looking at it like, okay, like, this is the place for me to finish my career. Hollywood's right there. You know, LeBron's been in movies already. So I think it's a good, as far, if he's looking at it from a business perspective and the idea that he could probably win maybe another championship or two, maybe in year 2 or 3 or 4, depending on who they get, then it's a good move. But, you know, it's definitely something I wasn't expecting.
Right. Well, for me, you know, looking at his options, Philadelphia wouldn't really make much sense personnel-wise, you know, because Ben Simmons is an oversized point guard who needs to have the ball in his hands. Joel Embiid, you know, very skilled center, can do it all. LeBron is also a guy who can do everything, but also needs the ball in his hands. So I don't really know how that would have worked out. But if he was going to go to the West, it was either going to be Houston for me or L.A. They just made sense, those destinations. Houston, because, you know, he can work with Chris Paul. He can kind of run the offense. LeBron can, you know, play off the ball a little bit. Because, you know, in the playoffs this year, I think he got tired, honestly, being on the ball almost every possession. You know, with Houston, he wouldn't have to be. You know, you got 2 pretty good scorers with that team. You got a really up-and-coming center. A lot of tough defensive-minded guys on the roster. So I think that would have made sense there as well. But, you know, this move to L.A. makes sense too for me. I had a lot of other components, you know, like I said, family, that, you know, the Houston and those other places didn't really provide. So I think it was great. You know, this year will be interesting to see what happens. You know, obviously any team with LeBron on it is a contender. But we'll see, you know, who attracts or, you know, in the next few years here, because there will be another star. It's just a matter of who, and it's a matter of when, but there will be another one. There definitely will be.
How confident are you that Kawhi Leonard is going to end up there in 2019?
Who knows? I mean, his trade to Toronto doesn't make much sense to me at all. I don't think either team got better from the trade. But we'll see. I mean, every good player seems to be playing in the West now. I'm just curious, you know, after a year in Toronto, I don't think him and Kyle Lowry will mesh that well. They'll probably win 43 games, make the playoffs, get bounced first round. And I think he'll be ready to win again, especially being in the Spurs culture. So I'm curious to see what happens. You know, I'd love Kawhi. He's probably the best two-way player in the league, you know, next to LeBron and Paul George. Any team would be lucky to have him, but there definitely will be a big market for him in 2019.
You know, you might not see any Eastern Conference teams. No, sorry. You might not see any Eastern Conference matchups on primetime this year. Like, who are we going to watch on TV now other than the Celtics?
You know, I was watching, you know, ESPN and watching their reactions to this new trade. It's like, it's going to be Boston and Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals for the next 8 years. You know, it's just, I mean, Milwaukee, you know, depending on what Giannis does and who they can get around him, can make a run too. But, geez, there's just nothing. There's nothing there anymore.
Like, it
absolutely nothing.
It literally feels like the box just got, like, emptied out. Like, I mean, you know, one thing I really appreciate about LeBron being in the East was just his storyline. Like, I always – he just – the drama he would just carry with him was just so awesome for the Eastern Conference. And I feel like especially this year made it it was good because, you know, it wasn't – he wasn't – the team wasn't as dominant, right? So they were just good at – like, teams like the Celtics and, you know, even Philly down the stretch and – another team, what was the other team I was thinking about? Maybe even Washington. You know, we started a question, okay, could one of these, in Toronto too, could one of these teams actually take out the King, right? Is LeBron going to stay if he loses before he gets to the finals? So, you know, as a Celtics fan, it's kind of a shame because I wanted to beat the guy to get there. Now he's gone, and if we get there, for me, it's just not going to feel the same because, you know, they're expected to do it. And they probably, if you beat Philly last year in five without, you know, two of your best players, you should cruise through the East. And it's just,
absolutely, man,
like, I don't know. I want the rival. I don't want him. I didn't want him to leave before we took him out. And it's a little disappointing, but, you know, it'd be fun to watch him in L.A. I mean, even when the Lakers are bad, they were still on primetime at 10:30 every night. So the NBA found a way to keep the Lakers relevant. But, you know, with Lonzo Ball, like, I got to ask you about him as a Lakers fan. Do you believe in him? Like, what do you think about him and just kind of like his pops and just that whole dynamic? And that's another reason why I was kind of like, whoa, LeBron's really gonna go into that mess with LeVar Ball. Like, what's your take on the BBB?
I think LeVar Ball is an absolute moron, to be honest with you. But you know, he, in a way, he's a genius. You know, he's saying all this crazy shit to the media, and the media's eating it up, and at the same time, he's pushing his brand forward, and he's a genius. You know, he's manipulative. He's making a brand for his boys. You know, I guess you could really admire that, but you know, it's just, there comes a point where it's like, all right, just stop. Like, you shouldn't have any influence on the front office. You shouldn't have any influence over the owners or coach or player personnel, anybody like that. Now, that's overstepping, in my opinion. But in terms of Lonzo, I do believe in him. He's got a great game. As a rookie, he averaged very solid numbers, you know, in terms of rookie point guards. You know, him and Ben Simmons were in elite class. And, you know, once he figures out his jump shot, you know, which will, you know, take probably another year to really get fluid, he's going to be great, man. He's a 6'5 point guard. He's super athletic. He's put on a ton of muscle this summer. I don't know if you've seen pictures of him lately, but
yeah,
he's gotten pretty big. And so he's going to hopefully, you know, get into the post a little bit, create some mismatch problems, and it's going to be great. You know, watching him in a free-flowing offense with LeBron James is going to be a lot of fun to watch because, you know, he's very skilled in the open court. And, you know, with LeBron, you'll definitely have a lot of opportunities to create stops on defense and get out and run. And that's going to be fun to watch, you know, with Kuzma and Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram. That's going to be fun to watch, man. But I really do believe in Lonzo. He's got a great NBA game. You know, he is NBA ready. He's NBA tested. You know, he plays the hardest position in the league. And I think he's handling pretty damn well so far. You know, knocked these injuries out. You know, he's a young kid still growing. You know, once he gets through that, he's going to have a hell of a career, I think.
It's funny. You talk about guys playing under pressure from the moment they got into the league. I don't know if there's been another player that's had as much pressure under him since LeBron got into the league, you know?
Oh, man, absolutely.
Now, at the same time, that kind of noise about him was what got him drafted. Because, I mean, when LeBron was in high school, you know, we all knew LeBron was NBA ready since high school. Alonzo, he was good, but his pops got his brand so big that you couldn't ignore him. The Lakers had to get a number two. So it's a little different in terms of, like, how the hype has manifested as far as, like, whether you could say it's benefited him or hurt him. But, you know what I mean? Like, either way, like the microscope is there, and you know, year two, like the criticism is gonna be even harder. The praise, like the noise is gonna be that much louder. So LeBron's there now too. So it's man, the thing is, I'm not a Lakers fan. I'm a Celtics fan, but like I appreciate stuff like this. You know what I mean? I'm just a fan of the game, and just when you see things come together like this, it's gonna be fun to watch the Lakers next year for sure.
Oh man, absolutely.
Yeah, like I said, it's crazy. I'm still kind of shocked about the LeBron thing because, you know, if I'm being honest, to me, you going to LA means I don't think you're getting six rings, man. I don't think you're going to get the six rings. I feel like him going to LA, to me, it's your legacy. It's not going to be the guy who got six rings, right? The best, as far as championships goes, the greatest thing that could be said for him when his time in LA is done is the fact that, you know, I was able to win a championship with three different teams, right? Because right. No great player can say that. And when you win a ring in LA, like Ice Cube was saying, it's almost like winning two championships because it's Hollywood. You know what I mean? There's something different about. I gotta give it to Laker Nation. There's something different about winning in La La Land, but you know. I don't see it happening in year one. If it happens in year, I feel like for them to win a championship in year two, they got to get two stars. You got to, if you want to be Golden State, if they keep that big four, you got to get two. You got to get Butler, or you got to get Kawhi. You got to have a big three with you to take that beast down in Golden State. But it's possible. But you know, something where LeBron's gonna have to be patient and you know really believe that Magic Johnson is gonna make the right moves, because that's what it comes down to. You got to get two guys to come down there to make it work.
I have a lot of faith in that. I mean, we've seen what he's done in such a short time already. We finally cleared that Mozgov contract, you know, that D'Angelo Russell contract, got that out of the way. We're still paying Luol Deng some crazy money, but that'll be done soon. You know, and after that, you know, we've created tons of cap space. We still have room for another guy. You know, we got rid of Julius Randle as well, Brooke Lopez. So there is some room, you know, and there's been rumors of Jimmy Butler being tired of working with Karl Anthony Towns. So we'd love to see Jimmy come out west. I mean, that's another two-way player right there that's just developed into an amazing NBA player. He just has everything. And who knows? I mean, like I said, maybe this year LeBron brings L.A., puts them back on the map, and, you know, makes it even more attractive. You know, maybe they get to the fourth or three seed and they – make the Western Conference Finals and lose to the Warriors. But that alone right there, that's enough to bring someone on board, because it's like, okay, if LeBron can get there with these young but talented guys, throw Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard in the mix, who knows, man? You know, there's expiring contracts out there, you know, for really solid role players like Hassan Whiteside, you know, guys like that. That would be unbelievable. And it's all about, okay, who can we attract to match up with the Warriors? That's how every team in the league is building right now. Every single one. And who knows what that guy will be for Los Angeles next year. But I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about bringing in superstars. Brandon Ingram, you know, when they drafted Brandon Ingram a couple years ago, people thought that this could be the next Kevin Durant in a couple years. So let me not sleep on him. Like, you know, his ceiling is high. Like, his ceiling absolutely is high, so we'll see what happens. The Lakers might not even have to get, you know, a third superstar. If Ingram or Lonzo can turn out to be a superstar, then you don't actually need to get that second guy. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, I feel like I sound like a Lakers fan, and I'm really not, but I'm just excited for stuff like this to build up. It's really going to be fun to see it all come together, and, you know, there's so many ways that this is going to enhance LeBron's legacy. Like, LeBron is going to be Hollywood, like, you're gonna see him on every single commercial. My god, the media, I'm telling you, September, when it's like, when they get to like the press conferences and whatnot, it's gonna be showtime. Like you said, it's literally absolutely gonna be showtime. The rivalry's back. I'm telling you, in December, they gotta do Celtics Lakers for the Christmas game, because who wouldn't want to see Kyrie in green going at LeBron in the yellow and gold? Because they already don't, you know, you already got that beef right there. So, man, It's going to be fun. It's really going to be fun. Do you have a Lakers jersey, by the way?
I do. I have many.
Man, what's it like being a Lakers fan in Boston, dude? Well, just in the Boston area.
It's great. You know, I went to a game, Lakers-Celtics game, this past year, and I was wearing my Magic Johnson jersey, and I was getting looks. I was getting chirped. You know, typical Boston fans, but, you know, I love it. You know, I love it. And it's just that rivalry now, it has a little bit more meaning because the Lakers have kind of been irrelevant since, you know, 2012, 2011. So it's great. You know, I'm excited. I'm really excited for this. And Lakers fans have been waiting. We've been patient. And we deserve this. We deserve it.
It's going to be the Battle of California, man. The Lakers might end up, you know, it's crazy because Golden State's gotten so much love in the West Coast in that state. Now I feel like it's going to be a fight for attention. But, hey, right. it's going to be fun. And literally, it's going to be showtime. And as a Celtics fan, I can't complain. I'm enjoying every bit. As an NBA fan, I'm enjoying it.
Absolutely. The league is ready for it.
The league's back. We just got to get the Knicks back on track. But Kyrie's not allowed. Yes. Kyrie's not allowed to go to New York. That's the only thing.
You know, my dad, like I said, he's a Knicks fan. He's been hurting for even longer than me. I think since like the late 90s, back in the Reggie Miller era. But the Knicks, man, they're just, you can't figure it out. You know, Porzingis is injured. Like, how do you really not work to actively get a superstar to play with him? Like, I just don't understand. It's mind-blowing to me. And they haven't had a good draft pick in such a long time. So it's just... it's kind of shitty. You know, they're such a big market team in the NBA as well. You know, when the Knicks were good and the Lakers and the Celtics were good, that's, you know, those were the really good days. But, you know, the Knicks are far, far from being relevant again. They got a good coach. You know, that helps. But can they get someone to play with Porzingis? Whether it's a point guard, which they desperately need, they drafted pretty well this year. I think Kevin Knox was a really good pickup. Got a good NBA game, good NBA body. But man, you cannot win this league without a point guard. And they just don't have one. They don't have the pieces. So they're a long ways away. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they got to get to the playoffs first. It's the Eastern Conference, man. So you can get in the Eastern Conference playoffs winning 41 games. Just get in.
Absolutely.
Let a free agent know that you guys have, you know, a superstar worth building around. And then, you know, because it goes two ways, right? Either you have a superstar player and someone decides, okay, I'm going to join this guy because I can win with him. Or you have a really good organization in a really nice market and one guy decides to show up or one guy gets drafted, then it kind of snowballs from there. But, I mean, the Knicks, you got both. You got the market and you got the superstar. It's the East. Just get in as an AC. You'll get a primetime game and someone will want to show up because they'll be watching Porzingis put up 42 points in the game. But, yeah, man, it's – man, football season's coming up and you got me more hyped for basketball right now.
Oh, man, I'm ready for fantasy football. But, man, I'm really excited for the NBA next year. I'm ready. I've been buzzing since we made that trade, made that signing. So I'm ready, man.
Same here, man. But yeah, Alex, man, I really this is where I'm gonna wrap up the show. But I had an awesome time having you on the show tonight, man. I really appreciate hearing your story about, you know, your background for soccer, coaching. It's amazing to hear, man. It was a great story, and definitely I didn't even know you were a Lakers fan, so it just made the conversation that much better, man. And definitely want to have you on the show more often as I get more of these episodes out. I'm about to release like three of them at once because I shot one with a buddy of mine Friday and then another one the other day, but the weekend was crazy. But all these episodes are going to come out like at once, like tonight or tomorrow morning.
Awesome. Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it was my pleasure. I appreciate you coming on.
No problem at all.
All right, man. You have a good night.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Later.
All right, everybody. That was episode 6 of the Rich in Facts podcast. Please like, share, and subscribe to all of my content, both on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, SoundCloud. I'm everywhere. I hope you guys really enjoy that episode I just put out there. I had a great time, doing that interview, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. And stay tuned because more great content is on the way. Thanks.